Welcome to another episode of Fit to Teach, where every Friday we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on their wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University and the director of the EOU Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Nathan Marshall. Sup, Nathan?
Sup, Kyle?
For Fit to Teach, each week we provide a summary of research paper or we discuss a topic that provides insights into some aspect of health and wellness, and we also suggest an achievable action item that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. The goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. Nathan, before we get started on today's topic, last week we had a long conversation about caffeine. Mm-hmm. Any loose ends that we need to tie up around that?
I don't think for me personally. I think I have a good understanding of it. I haven't really drank caffeine since last week, so no new experiences in that, in that regard.
You're so lucky in terms of not needing it every day.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I do, and I just don't know it yet.
Well, maybe.
It's like one of those things where it's like you don't know how you feel. You're like, oh, I couldn't feel better. And then you like do something. You're like, oh, wow, I feel amazing. Maybe it's like that.
Well, the tipping point for my wife was kids. Yeah. She, and particularly our second kid, who had a tough time like with his sleep schedule and things like that. And so she started drinking coffee and now she really enjoys it.
Is she addicted?
Probably.
Yeah. Most people are.
I mean, we plan... Everything is planned around having coffee in the morning. Not everything, but I mean, like, if we're going camping, it's like, okay, what's the coffee situation? Or if we're, like, staying at a hotel, it's like, you know, you're always, it's, like, always on my mind, like, all right, what's the coffee situation in the morning? Is this good enough to get by? I will say that I love good coffee, but I am not a coffee snob. I will drink really crappy coffee and enjoy it.
Like diner coffee?
Yes, exactly.
I love diner coffee.
Mm-hmm. So you can give me that, or you can give me like a $12 pour over from Abbot Kinney in Venice, and I'll enjoy that too.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. So today's topic, you wanted to talk about supplements.
I was thinking about creatine. That's what actually made me think about this topic, but I feel like we could expand it or
generally.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we might have to do like a multi-part series on this. Sure. Hopefully it's relevant. Let us know, email us, let us know if there's particular supplements you want to hear about or particular like diets or approaches or those types of things. We're happy to tackle those type of topics. I mean, the idea of just supplementation, I think what you have to do is think about it. Okay. In general, you have to get past the first kind of points around supplements. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, do I even try supplements? And then once you get past that, you can start to have a conversation. Okay, which supplements do I want to take? Which do I think that I need? Which do I think are going to be the most effective? And then from there, you know, it gets it really into the weeds with what's the dosing, what's the timing, what's the cost, what's the, you know, the potential benefit, those types of things. And, you know, the supplement industry is this like, you know, everybody starts a conversation around supplements is that there's two major things. One is that supplements are like a multi-billion-dollar industry and people do a lot of supplements, but they don't really know a lot about the supplement industry or what and why they're taking them. And two, and part of that is the supplement industry's fault. They want to keep you confused and excited about new. They want to overpromise new and exciting things so that they can keep selling things. And two, I think it's pretty well understood that supplements are considered food, and food is scrutinized by the FDA at a different level than pharmaceuticals or drugs. So even though a lot of times you talk about supplements as taking these things almost like it's a pharmaceutical or a daily drug or something that's going to like benefit your health in the form of like a pill or a solution or something like that, in the same way a lot of supplements come in the form of, or pharmaceuticals come in the form of, they're actually there's very, very little regulation because they are considered foodstuffs. And then even then, there's just so many in the volume of it that the batch testing falls behind, and there's all these different things. And so there are some things that we do to like ensure quality, that certain companies do to ensure quality. But there's a lot of like really gnarly supplements out there with potentially unknown, quantities of things or illegal things or those types of that type of stuff. So that's kind of the big overview of it. Do you, well, so I think the most important big picture thing to consider when you're considering supplements is this question, which is, what are you supplementing? And what happens, and I see this a lot with my freshmen that take freshman nutrition and they do their dietary analysis assignment and there's very few fruits and vegetables, and then they say, but I take a multivitamin, so I'm good. And that is not the definition of supplement. Supplementation means in addition to. What are you know, what are you supplementing? And if you're not already supplementing selectively things that may not be optimized or are hard to optimize from a healthy, well-balanced diet, then I would say generally you need to go take a step back from supplements and start thinking about, okay, what can I do from a dietary standpoint to optimize this?
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking about it too, 'cause we've talked about this before, and I talked about this when I first took nutrition with you, but I grew up taking a lot of supplements, kind of every supplement known to man, probably. My mom's gonna listen to this, you know, a lot. I'm like, and by no means like I don't, and again, I don't know. I know that some of them worked, and I think that some of them didn't. And I was too young to really kind of know. I didn't really know how it worked. I never understood it. But the transition from high school to college, because even in high school, I took them. I wasn't just when I was a little kid. I took them in high school, and then I transitioned into college. And I don't necessarily feel different per se, but my life changed a lot. I, you know, college athlete. I started cooking food on my own. I changed my schedule around. So there's a lot of confounding variables. So I guess there's a couple of things is I want to know is what are the supplements that work, and what are the ones that don't, and then also just because I'm curious if we could talk about creatine a little bit.
We
Just
can
because
talk
I
about
want to,
creatine.
because right now in my current position, I'm honestly pretty broke. I can't really afford that many supplements. So I guess it's okay, if I were to invest in one or two, what might those be?
B. So I think these are all like really normal and really important questions to ask. So the first thing is that you're taking supplements not to feel a profound difference, typically. Now, there are some examples that will provide a profound difference. So one of those examples, for example, is supplemental iron. So if you're low in ferritin and that leads to ferritin deficient anemia, so iron deficient anemia is characterized by like a really low ferritin level. And then you take like a highly absorbable form of iron and you start to feel significantly better. Now, if you're a vegetarian, if you're a vegan, if you're like a vegan runner, if you're at a higher risk of being deficient in iron because we just don't drink, we don't eat as much blood as we used to, and that's like the best source of heme iron, and we absorb heme iron pretty well. So for people that are limiting their red meat intake, that aren't eating a lot of organ meat, that those sorts of things, and you're feeling like fatigue and other there's a bunch of interesting things. Like I don't know, my sister was just we found out that she had low iron and she was like craving ice, and I didn't know that that was a symptom of low iron.
My
And
girlfriend does. She used to chew ice. Yeah, and she takes iron now.
and brittle fingernails is another one, like brittle cracking fingernails and things like that. So there's these like signs, and in that case, like it it's sort of like supplements to me are always this thing of like optimizing. And so in that case, I even, yes, you're supplementing with iron, but it's not, you're meeting a need. It's not necessarily supplementation. So
For
that's
sure.
one that can be super
For
effective,
sure.
but that's also one you have to be really careful with because too much iron can be not great. You can actually have iron toxicity and things like that. The other one is, I think that just fundamentally, we do not eat enough food sources that have a lot of vitamin D. And when you don't eat food sources that have a lot of vitamin D, and there really aren't that many food sources with a lot of vitamin D. And if you'll say, oh, well, spinach is good in vitamin D, or this is good in vitamin D, or that's good in vitamin D. The reality is it's high in vitamin D for a food, but it pales in comparison to getting sun exposure on bare skin without sunscreen on. But we have to, be considerate of like skin cancer and getting burnt and all these other different types of things. And we just don't spend our lives outside anymore, which is how we evolved to make vitamin D. So it turns out, though, that vitamin D is easy to synthesize. It's highly absorbable when you take it in a supplemental form. But again, it is a supplement, but it's almost like one of those things, like if you live above the 45th parallel and you're not getting your vitamin D checked regularly, most GPs would encourage people to do that because it will make you feel significantly better, especially in the winter months when people aren't spending time outside and the days are shorter and the angle of the sun is such that even when you are outside in the sun during that time, you usually have a lot of clothes on and the angle of the sun is not as radiative, like you're not getting as much exposure to those UV lights that stimulate vitamin D synthesis.
It's interesting because, like, I think because, like, I took vitamin D every winter. Like, there was a time, and my mom would buy it, and I'd take it. And, like, I would just never know, like, is this work? And it's just weird because, like, I've actually just talked to my girlfriend about this too. Like, I've never taken, like, a drug. Like, so I never know, like, what that, like, experience is like of just where you can feel it changing how you are. And so I guess, like,
Well, that's not true. You've drank alcohol.
But, like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like a pill.
Okay.
Because we it came up, we were talking about something like, with study habits, whatever people taking that. So we were thinking about that kind of talking about that way. So it's just like, so like from my, and I'm wondering too, like, is it individual? Like, will it affect people differently?
Yes.
So
And
just like food and stuff like that
yeah, of
too.
course, there's individual differences and things like that. And there is like reference ranges and cutoffs. And for vitamin D, you can't tell if you're deficient or you're not deficient. And it may impact you, for example, like maybe it doesn't give you like seasonal affective disorder or those sorts of things, which we know it can be tied to. So maybe it doesn't make you like depressed, but there's also like, maybe it isn't maximizing your muscle function because, like, vitamin D is really important for muscle function and recovery and things like that. And so, but you wouldn't be able to tell that because you're young and you're at a certain athletic level and you just think that's my athletic level, but you don't know. And it's hard to tell because there's so many factors that go into a complex life. So it's like you may. Like what happens is that when people start eating well, taking supplementation, prioritizing sleep and exercising, all that together sets a new normal typically. And those individuals will say, well, I don't feel different, but you can't transport yourself back
Exactly,
to where. So the only way you can unwrap this is when you say like, when you go, if you're journaling events that typically are transient, they come and go, and you can see a rate of those change over time. So, for example, if you have gastrointestinal distress, if you have diarrhea on a semi-regular basis, but it comes and goes and it doesn't disrupt your life, but then all of a sudden you start taking like probiotics, for example, and you take probiotics for a couple weeks and you just do it every day and you don't think about it. It's really like you don't feel fundamentally different, but if you sit down and go like, when's the last time like I had like a really upset stomach or I had a really like adverse thing? It's been a while, I think. And then you're like, oh, so maybe there is something here. But it doesn't like fundamentally make you feel like a completely different person when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, that makes sense. One thing too that I act this is actually I remember this very vividly. So like I used to take magnesium before I went to bed, like the calm. You definitely know it. And like I remember that working for me
Yes,
as a kid. Like
absolutely.
I took a lot of melatonin too, and like we've talked about melatonin on here before about like your body naturally produces it. There is a point where it's too much. I remember dreaming very vividly when I would take more than I wanted to. But the magnesium for me, like that was the one thing, and it always tastes, my mom would get raspberry flavor.
Yeah, so good.
So good. And like I would always be like, okay, that's like this works. I'm taking a lot of different
Absolutely.
stuff, but I know this one works.
So, and magnesium is really interesting. If you hear people talk about the different types of magnesium supplements, there's a bunch of different like biologically active forms of magnesium, but that one in particular, magnesium citrate, which is what Calm is. Everyone in our family takes Calm gummies every night. It's awesome. And you're right. Like, but taking magnesium citrate prior to going to bed is, and that's shown in several studies that it kind of makes you fall asleep faster and sleep longer and more sound. But again, a lot of people mistake those sorts of things of like, well, you can't get 4 hours of sleep at night, but make those 4 hours somehow like better by taking magnesium. Like you have to have a full night of sleep. That's again, this comes back to this term supplement. So magnesium does work in certain circumstances for this type of stuff. There's also magnesium, I think it's called magnesium threonate. Anyways, it's supposed to be more bioactive in your brain. And then there's magnesium citrate, and then there's elemental magnesium. Anyways,
Whole
there's like
bunch, yeah.
a so and it can get kind of goofy looking into some of those things. The other ones that have like pretty good evidence are fish oil. And again, this is one of those things that like we don't eat a lot of wild game meat, and wild game meat, fish and animal has a higher percentage of long chain unsaturated and polyunsaturated fatty acids, especially fish. The thing is like you could eat more fish, but even like wild caught fish swims in polluted water. And so there is this risk when you are just eating fish all the time of like having high levels of mercury build up in the system. It takes a really long time to clear that. And so there's some long-term concerns with like, oh, well, I'm not going to take fish oil, I'm just going to eat fish. Whereas like now the fish oil that you take, they purify that oil, they remove the mercury, and then you can take it. So there's that. And I think like vitamin D, fish oil, magnesium, these are pretty well established. And then you start to get into ones that are more either like sport specific or sort of need specific from there. And again, it's one of those things where like if you eat fast food 5 times a week and you take some fish oil, I don't know what that impact is really going to be, right? And so you really want to think first like, okay, how can I get my diet in order? And now based off this new diet, I'm doing the best that I can. It's raw vegetables at every meal. It's you know healthy sources of meat. There's lots of color. I'm minimizing my insulin spikes. I'm getting some regular exercise. I'm practicing good sleep hygiene. And you want to kind of get that to be your new normal. And then it's like, all right, I'm definitely not getting enough vitamin D and I have the blood work to show it. Maybe I'm eating more chicken because I don't like as much red meat. So I need to like consider an iron supplement. And then, you know, maybe I have trouble sleeping sometimes during the week. So I take magnesium. Like that's kind of usually how the story sort of unfolds.
That's
And
fair.
then you get into more like sports specific stuff that gets kind of interesting. So you've asked about creatine a couple times. Creatine is really healthy, and there's a lot of compelling studies. Well, there's a couple things. One is that let's just back up and say what it is. So creatine is found basically in all cells in our body. And it's this molecule, creatine, that gets, once it's inside your cell, it gets a phosphate attached to it. And then that phosphate can go from the creatine to a molecule called ADP to make an ATP. And ATP is kind of the energy currency of the cell. So when you're exercising, you're producing more ATP. But we're always producing some level of ATP and using it because chemical reactions and body processes require ATP. So we're always like using ATP for our liver to function, our brain to work, our heart to beat, our blood cells to work, our kidneys to work. These things require energy. That's why we have like a metabolic rate. Just from like sitting in bed, you're still burning calories. And so what creatine does is it goes in the cell, it increases this like really fast but inefficient form of energy production. So it goes from creatine phosphate, one chemical reaction, to one ATP. And like, just to put that in contrast, if you break down a molecule, one molecule of fat, a 16 carbon fat gets you 122 ATP. But the process to break that down and generate that ATP is a lot more complex. So creatine is often thought of as, well, that's just for athletes that are explosive and strength athletes, because they're trying to maximize their quick, powerful strength. And that's, creatine is the energy system we use during those, like lifting a weight that just takes a second or something like that. So and so when the idea was like, well, we can basically synthesize this and you can take it. And there was a lot of skepticism when creatine came out, like in the late 90s. People started taking it and feeling all these like really positive benefits, but it was, science is rightfully skeptical for new wonder cures and things like that. And now, we've had more than like 25 years of like really good, arduous studies that show creatine is safe, creatine is healthy, it's performance enhancing. And the reality is that now we're finding that it may have like health benefits for people, especially our aging population. And when you think about losing muscle mass, creatine helps maintain muscle mass. It helps, like, when you add creatine to your recovery drink, you increase glycogen storage. When you, people that are post-surgical, for example, and they know their exercise is going to be limited for a certain amount of time, taking creatine can help maintain some of that lean mass. Things like that can occur. So in an aging population, taking creatine could be the difference of you having a reaction time to like reach out and catch yourself when you like trip on your, trip on a like a little bit of a raised floor, or get your feet caught under you versus falling down and hurting your hip or your shoulder or something like that. So there's actually quite a few studies that are examining this across a variety of populations and finding overall in like otherwise healthy people. And again, none of this is medical advice. I want to be like very clear about that. We're just discussing like what the scientific literature says about this. But the, and this is not a prescription either. It's just, this is information. But there's several studies that show benefits in aging. Yeah, go ahead.
And then so I'm thinking like what, 'cause I didn't know about it until I got to college, and it was all like, I always thought it was like a gym bro.
Yeah,
Like that's what
totally.
you do to get big. And it's not obviously not steroids, but it's like it can help you, gain muscle mass and those kind of things. So like from an endurance athlete standpoint, or even not necessarily like
Like a
someone,
mixed
yeah,
athlete,
someone
like
who's like
basketball
doing
player, soccer
exactly.
player, or
And
something like
I
that.
always, and then I heard about the whole like you gain water weight, makes you dehydrate, and like based off of like our sessions, I was like, I'm just not gonna mess with anything that can make me more dehydrated, because I know I'm probably just am chronically dehydrated. I know I'm not great about drinking water. I
Optimizing your
work out
water
a
intake.
lot,
Yeah,
during
totally.
summer we're doing 2 days. I was like, I don't want to mess with this.
Yeah.
So like from an endurance standpoint, or for someone who's
Sure.
doing a mix of both, like can you talk about like water weight, muscle mass, that
Sure.
kind of thing?
So the as best as I can understand it, when you take supplemental creatine, there's a certain amount of it that gets into your muscles. And we can, by taking supplements, we can push that above what it would normally be. So let's say creatine level's 10 in the muscle, And I take 5 grams of creatine every day. I'm making these numbers up, except for the 5 grams every day. So you take 5 grams of creatine every day. And what that's been shown, that's enough to maximize biological ceiling. So that gets you to, let's say, level 20. Now, that means you've doubled the amount of creatine. If we just use my numbers, you've taken 10 to level 20. You've doubled the amount of creatine that's in the cell, and the cell always wants to have the same ratio of water to particulates inside of it. So if you increase the number of particulates inside the cell, it's going to draw water into the cell to rebalance that ratio. And so, based on my understanding, the water weight is not, you don't, you're not at increased risk necessarily for dehydration, but it is recommended that you take it with plenty of water so that you have what you need to support what the cells require to rebalance their osmotic like
So that's like
distribution
the
of it.
water weight you would
And
gain
that's the water weight.
because you're
It's
just drinking more and keeping
yeah, and
more.
you're holding on to it. And so it, but it's intramuscular. So and this is one of the reasons why the gym bros that are not doing it for sport but doing it for aesthetics, there was some concern about, was it going to make my muscles look smooth instead of like shredded because it's this water weight, and water weight makes you look puffy and stuff like that. But the reality is, it's like inside the cell. And so now from adding mass standpoint, so you get water, you increase that water weight, and different people have different sensitivities to increasing that water weight. And the best that I can understand is that I think it probably has to do something with muscle fiber type. So different muscle fibers, especially like fast twitch, really powerful muscle fibers, have a lot less mitochondria and a lot more glycolytic enzymes and creatine. And so if somebody is at a 10, if two people are at a 10 and then they start taking 5 grams of creatine every day, and one person's biological ceiling for that is 20 because of they're more of a hybrid athlete, but someone's a really twitchy athlete and their capacity may be 25 or 30. So now that person's going to be more sensitive to the weight gain than the person, because when you look at the data, it's all over the place. It's like, do you gain water weight? Well, in endurance athletes, some do and some don't. And does it in all these different types of things? And there was a recent paper out about how in longer endurance sports that have a lot of pace changes, so like biathlon and soccer and which is essentially an endurance sport with intermittent sprinting in it. Same with like cross country mountain biking. It's a 90-minute effort, but you're going up hills, down hills, you're jumping over roots. Biathlon, you're like sprinting, stopping, going uphill, downhill, trying to calm down to shoot, then sprint and take off. And there's a real argument and case to be made for creatine as being beneficial under those circumstances. Even the power to weight ratio exceeds what it would be without creatine and a little bit lighter.
I get what you're saying.
But a lot of those athletes don't have a lot of fast twitch, and so they don't seem to gain as much weight. Whereas somebody else starts taking creatine, they're like, I blew up. And it's like, well, they were probably like a twitchy athlete or just sensitive to like creatine water retention in these other ways. I don't know. So we see everything from, no weight gain to 2 pounds to like 9 pounds. And then, and you have to like kind of figure that out and go like, okay, well, how do we manage this? And what's the benefit to risk ratio? And how much stress is this putting on the joints with the other misconception is like that creatine itself makes you big. And you go, well, how does something that generates energy make you big? It's not that the creatine makes you big. It's that the creatine increases your capacity to train to a small but potentially effective degree. So if you've like hit a plateau or you're not adapting, you're having a hard time stimulating the system to the degree that you want to stimulate it to, taking creatine could get you an extra 2 reps, for example. And then it's not the creatine itself, it's that load, that change in load that allows your body a new stimulus, and your body then has the kind of opportunity to super compensate from that.
Okay.
And so you go above the ability that you, now this is not a, again, like too many people exercise too hard too often. So this is not about like increasing your max exercise capacity and unlimited ability to just max all the time and get huge. That isn't what we're talking about here. But it's really, really interesting. And the reason why we're able to have such a nuanced and interesting conversation about it is because it was like this thing that theoretically thought was going to work this way. It proved to be safe to consume. It ends up being safe to consume over time. And now, like the scientific community and the sports science community has had 2.5 decades to study it. And it's a clearer picture of the potential benefits, potential drawbacks, individual responsiveness to it is really able to emerge.
Okay.
And that's the thing that frustrates people because they'll say, like, well, there's like this new hot thing called urolithin A, which is supposed to like increase your mitochondria and do all this stuff. And it was a micronutrient that was identified through this basically a small molecule pharmaceutical identification process that this company did, but with natural foods. And they found this ingredient in pomegranate called urolithin A. And now they package it and they kind of promoted as this anti-aging thing and all this other stuff. And there's some interesting preliminary data on it. But it's super, super expensive and there's only like 5 studies on it.
Interesting.
So like you wouldn't necessarily you have to have a beginner's mind when it comes to this stuff. So you have to say, no, that's a huge waste of money. You're just giving yourself expensive pee versus that's interesting. There's physiologic plausibility for it. The initial data looks interesting. I wonder what the long-term outcome of this will be.
Okay.
And then you start keeping an eye on it and then maybe test it a little bit. And so there's lots of really interesting things like that that are out there, especially when you get to the point where you're going for like the tiny, tiny little 1%. So some of the ones I'm kind of tracking closely that I think are interesting are like hydrogen water. Hydrogen-rich water, I think, is really interesting. And the other thing you want to make sure is like, is there a downside to this? There may not be an upside, but there definitely can't be a clear downside, right? So even if creatine doesn't work the same for everybody or doesn't work for you, we've had people taking creatine every single day for 15 years, and there's nobody that has like dropped dead. And we just pointed and said, that's because of creatine. So it's super safe, right? And that's the thing. Okay, is this safe? Yes. Okay, is it effective? That's a different question. And then how much money do I want to put into this? How much am I trying to optimize? What other areas can I get a better bang for my buck? And then how kind of crazy do I want to get with the number of things that I take every day? Because it gets like, but there's some really interesting ones, but they're never going to like make up for a lack of a good diet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And two, I know you gotta go, but
No,
like
you're
real
good.
quick. So like
Yeah.
I know, it's advertised as a gym bro thing and you do like there's like loading phases.
Yeah,
And
yeah,
like
yeah.
so like
Yeah.
if you're doing it purely like as a supplement to, just you wanna try,
Yeah.
see if it makes you feel a little better when you're starting your resistance
Yeah,
training,
yeah,
just
yeah.
really basic.
Yeah.
Would you go through that or would you just take it as this?
So there's three possible options here. The first option is 20 grams a day for 7 days and 5 grams a day indefinitely after that. That's the standard protocol. There's like, I've at least read this in one paper that said you may not have as much water weight gain if you just start at 5 grams per day and go from there, but you won't maximize the creatine. Like, if you take 20 grams of creatine per day, especially if you space it out throughout the day, So you do like 5 grams 4 times a day for 7 days. At the end of that 7 days, your muscles are maxed with creatine.
Well, that's a lot though. Also, like perspective, that's a lot of.
It's a lot.
I
It's a
know
lot of
people who have
effort.
done
It's a
it.
lot of
Yeah,
time.
exactly,
It's a lot
exactly.
of like, and that's when drinking lots of water is super important
Exactly.
because you're taking all that. You want to get the stuff you're taking into your cells, and it's only going to get there if it has enough plasma and water and interstitial fluid to balance what it needs from an osmotic standpoint, right? Okay. So you have that. That's your fastest way to get to the ceiling, and then you can maintain it with 5 grams a day. You can get just as high. You can get to that ceiling by taking 5 grams a day, but it takes 15 to 20 days, is what they say. And there may be less water weight gain because you kind of slowly
Gradually, yeah.
introduce it over a longer period of time. The sort of third option is that you take 2 grams for a month, then 3 grams for a month, then 4 grams for a month, and 5 grams for a month, or 5 grams indefinitely. And you sort of check in each month to see if you're feeling better or not feeling better. And I said three. There's a fourth one, which is that it may not be necessary to maximize it, especially in high responders to it, to still get some benefit versus max benefit. So for example, if 3 times a week you took 5 grams per day, that may be enough. It won't be enough to take you from a 10 to a 30, but it could be enough to take you from like a 10 to a 17. And so it's still higher than baseline, but it's just not, you're not guaranteed to like max out
So
on
you don't
it.
have to like do the full, because that's the impression I was under. It was like it's a huge, taking creatine is a commitment. That's what I
It
thought.
is. And I don't know, because like everything I see, which it just doesn't make any sense because different people have different amounts of muscle mass and different muscle fiber types and things like that. But females, males, linebacker to a marathon runner, the recommendation is 5 grams a day indefinitely. And that just can't be dialed for everybody.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And so when you do it like that, and I guess the point is like, because it's something we make, because it's identical to the supplemental version is identical to the version that we make in our body, we typically get exogenous creatine from things like chicken meat and cow meat and things like that. All that has creatine in it. Because of that, it's not like you take 5 grams a day and then you miss a day and all of a sudden you're just like you're falling flat on your face or something. It doesn't work like that. So there is a little bit of flexibility, in my opinion, with how you take it and how you evaluate whether or not you like taking it. It's super cheap now too. Like it's
Well, that's the reason I ask.
get a huge bang for your buck
And
with
I
it.
know you're a big promoter of it too when we talked about
I'm
it.
not a big
Not
promoter
a big promoter. Okay, but
of it.
you.
Like let's
Okay, yeah.
I am a provider of it. Accurate scientific information about where the creatine story
Yeah, and that's what
stands.
you said in nutrition too. So that's why I wanted to bring it up again. So.
And you get it's just too easy to say like, oh, supplements are worthless. You're just giving yourself expensive urine. You can get everything you need from a good diet. Our diet is not the way. No, we live in a complex society. We're complex biological systems, and our food chain is strange. So sometimes supplements may help under certain
For
circumstances.
sure. I agree.
But they can't make up for a bad diet.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Yeah, and we can dive into some other ones if people like this. Let us know what you think. But overall, I think that was like a good primer for just at least how to frame considering whether or not you want to take supplements.
For
So,
sure.
thanks for listening to Fit to Teach. We provide insights into health and wellness for teachers and staff each week. We will see you next week for another episode. Until then, chat later. Okay.
Have a great weekend and rest of next week.
Have a great weekend, and yeah, we'll check in with you in a week.